What's good, y'all? It's your boy C Roll Money Money, that C dot R O double dollar sign, host of the Nerding with Friends podcast. I'm joined today with my co-host, Codename Comet.
Salutations, my fellow blurge nerds and peaceful herds. It's your boy Codename Comet. How y'all doing?
And we are also joined by a good friend of the show. Y'all give it up for Garrett Curtis.
Hey, man. Happy to be back with you.
Man, happy to have you back. How long has it been? What was the last episode you were on? I believe it was another movie review, right?
Yeah, it was it was the Snyder Cut. Snyder Cut of Justice.
You know, that was a movie that I was excited to see, and I'm glad it didn't disappoint me. Much like the movie we're talking about today, Spider-Man No Way Home, third installment of the Home Trilogy for Spider-Man in the MCU. And I think it hit it out of the park, man. I'm excited to talk about this movie with you guys. So if y'all ready, let's get into it. First thing I'm going to say is this is a top three Spider-Man movie. You got this, Spider-Man 2, and Into the Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. And everything else is down below.
Just don't talk about it. Yes. Like it didn't matter. It's precursors to this, to the big three.
And this movie, it really did a lot for, I think, Tom Holland, Spider-Man. Because my biggest gripe for all his movies were he's like Iron Man Jr. He's always looking for help. He's always trying to impress somebody, whether it's Iron Man, Mysterio, Nick Fury. And this movie, I felt like for all the craziness that was going on, it was grounded in Spider-Man characters who have some type of vendetta against Spider-Man.
Yeah. Which was just great with the way that they did it. And I also felt like for the first time, like in all of his movies and every time that we've seen him, we finally get a movie that's about him. It's not about, like you said, tied to his connection to Iron Man, his connection to the Avengers. It's about him and his actions and him learning and actually having to grow. Because I feel like every time, because there is that, you know, mentor or connection or help, like he kind of gets that cop out. And this is the first time it's like, this is on you, buddy. Like you have to fix this. And I like how May was a pivotal point in him sticking to what he actually had to do and his responsibilities, because he wanted to give up so many times.
Absolutely. Yes, what do you think about the movie, man? I know you're a big Spider-Man fan.
I loved it. You know, it's funny. I got a couple of calls the same day I saw it. A couple of my friends called me. They're like, yo, you got to check this movie out. So I was actually heading home, and I was like, let me go to the movie theater real quick and check this out. You know, because, I mean, here's the thing. When you have friends and they're so passionate about it, you can't discuss it with them because there are a lot of spoilers. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want it to get spoiled. So I said, let me watch it as soon as possible. And let me tell you, I was amazed. I was, you know, I was thoroughly entertained. And, you know, they hit, like you said earlier, Chris, they hit the ball out of the park. And, you know, one of the biggest things that I had a similar gripe with the earlier movies, I loved the first two, the Tom Holland Spider-Man films, but I always felt like the stakes weren't high enough for him. Because like you guys always said, he always had help. He always had that support system. And it felt like Spider-Man wasn't really a star of his own movie. Nope. Now, fast forward to No Way Home. And we start to see not only is he cut off from his support system, but now we're starting to see real sacrifice. Because Spider-Man movies have always been about sacrifice. And I think we really missed out on an opportunity to see sacrifice because we didn't see Uncle Ben die in this in this franchise. So, you know, I guess Aunt May took that role, you know, and was able to tell him, hey, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. That's a very, very important line in Spider-Man lore, because what it basically says is, yes, you've got the powers, but you've got to understand the ramifications of your actions. And this movie really, really drove the point home, so much so that at the end, he made a really grown-up choice. He made a decision, you know what? I'd love to have MJ and Ned in my life, but I understand that it would be better for them if they don't remember who I am. And that when I saw him make that decision, I said, you've grown. Because the earlier Spider-Man never would have made that decision.
Never.
Right.
So you can see where everything he went through in this movie, the pain, the loss, he grew, and he's going to be a much better Spider-Man going forward because now he understands that everything you do, there are consequences. So you have to pause before you do stuff.
And I like how you just mentioned that he showed his growth by even making that decision to give up, you know, being friends with MJ and Ned, because Stephen Strange pointed out, like, he made that whole decision before even trying to, like, call the college and say,
hey, handle this like a person.
Handle it like a person, like a human, like an adult would.
Yeah,
like,
this who's is an friends with the sorcerer.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, this is your immediate thought. Like, you didn't even consider any other possibilities of what could happen. And it's like, that's someone who's, in a way, that's a loose cannon. Like, you have too much power at your disposal that you could just go and do this, and you didn't even think about it. That's a very childlike way to be when you have that much ability, and he can't act that way, and it showed.
Yeah, we talked about it in our last Spider-Man episode. It's like, not only are you going to a sorcerer to fix your problems, it's right after the world has been affected by this event. And it's like, you just can't keep going from goateed man to goateed man to goateed man, trying to pass off your responsibilities. And how Gareth put it, this was the movie where somebody close to him died directly because of his actions. You know, and in the Tobey Maguire movies, we really saw it with Uncle Ben. That was a very complete narrative. Those, you know, you think about the time it was made, an isolated trilogy. It's like, this Uncle Ben death is going to carry weight throughout the movie. It's the first time it's being done. And it's not like we're Amazing Spider-Man where you have to change things up a bit. But what I liked about Amazing Spider-Man is that his connection with Gwen was probably the strongest connection he had in those movies. Mm-hmm. And losing her was his turning point. Tom Holland hasn't had this happen to him. Uncle Ben has been nothing but a passing remark. Tony Stark's death, while not his fault, he still felt this responsibility to live up to that name. But now that Aunt May is the one that's gone, who, even in the comics and the shows, like, the connection he has with May might even be stronger than the one he had with Uncle Ben.
Correct.
Now that she's gone directly because of a mistake he made with bringing these villains into the multiverse, that was really his wake-up call into, you know what, I have to start doing right. And like we said earlier, he was always going out for help, but it kind of worked out in his favor when he was able to team up with Toby and Andrew Spider-Man, seeing as how they're the only heroes in their world and they have no experience with teamwork other than the very small sliver we saw of Andrew with Gwen and Toby working with Harry Osborn.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like, realistically, it was what he needed above anything else in that moment. Like, it was the perfect finale. And I don't even want to talk about it too much because there's so much else to talk about before we even get to that point. But it really was a perfect culmination of what we were teased for so long. I felt like the execution of it all was kind of very well done. I gotta ask, of the three, like, who's your favorite here?
Wow. You know, I'm always gonna be partial to Tobey Maguire.
Okay.
You know, because Tobey Maguire, I just think at the time when the original trilogy came out with the Spider-Man movies, I just remember thinking, I'll never forget, I loved the first one, but the second one, the second Spider-Man movie, I remember walking out of that theater because I'm a huge Superman fan. Yeah. And I was blown away by part two. And I remember walking out of that theater, and I'll never forget, I said to myself, why can't we get a Superman movie that feels that was my first reaction. Because I was so blown away, but at the same time, I was upset. Because I'm like, man, Superman, they even had the shirt ripped. I'm like, come on, man. You gave us everything that I've ever wanted in a Superman movie. You know, it was, you gave us, you know, that they balanced it perfectly. we got a believable villain. He wasn't even really a villain. He started off a great guy. He was a mentor to Peter. The accident happens, you know, he loses control. And I love at the end, he kind of regains control and sacrifices himself. Mm-hmm. So for that, you know, that trilogy, I mean, I loved Amazing Spider-Man, and I do like, you know, I'm starting to grow into Tom Holland as Spider-Man. The first two Spider-Man movies, I thought they were just okay. I think each one got progressively better. But this third one, definitely there was a huge leap in quality to the point where now I'm able to say, you know what, when we're having a conversation about greatest Spider-Man movies of all time, No Way Home has got to be up there with the Spider-Man 2s, you know, even, you know, into the Spider-Verse, all that. It's, you know, it's there. But I'm partial to Tobey Maguire. I'm always going to be.
And you know, I feel like even Tobey's like, when they brought Toby in, I felt like the way that he played that role again, it's just like this is daddy, like father spider right here. Like he's
the big brother.
He's seasoned. Like he knows what's going on. Like he's been there. Like he could tell you how to deal with everything. I love in the end how he didn't even say anything to Tom. He just gave him the look like, no, this ain't it. Like, I know better. This is not the way. And like, he just let low. If they would have just brought Andrew Garfield, it's one thing. But to have both of them, it's just special.
And just to talk about Green Goblin and Dr. Octopus, for me, the movie started off really slow in the beginning. I was never a fan of the whole everybody knows Spider-Man's identity at the end of the movie thing. I'm like, all right, man, like there are so many ways to combat this. You know, like this doesn't have to be a thing at all. I said it in the last episode we did about Spider-Man. You got Skrulls, face changing technology. He's worked with the Avengers. There has to be somebody on this planet who can vouch for him that he's a good guy. It has to be. But I did like that we ended up getting that Matt Murdock reveal, you know, getting him out of the legal trouble. And how great is it that we got Matt Murdock, Daredevil, and Kingpin within the same week for everybody who saw everything? Like, Marvel was really on their A game this year when it came to content. But things really picked up for me after we see Dr. Octopus. I feel like that is when the movie really starts to get good. And Alfred Molina, Willem Dafoe turned in more great performances. Of the five villains we got, those two, I think, definitely did the best. And then we got Jamie Foxx. His character was a little bit different than the one we saw before. Mm-hmm. And I think the actors who did Sandman and the Lizard kind of just did their voiceover. A lot of the stuff was reused from the movies. Like if you watch, like with him transforming, that's the scene from Spider-Man 3 when he's in the collider, and then when he's transformed, the Lizard transforms. That's the scene from the Amazing Spider-Man movie. So that's also why we saw a lot of Sandman in his Sandman form when he was, you know, walking around like Flint Marko for most of Spider-Man 3.
Makes sense.
But one thing I want to talk about when it comes to the villains is the whole idea of them getting, you know, sent back and fixing them. I wasn't a huge fan of that either, but it seems very on brand for Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. But in a sense, us knowing a lot of these characters, I feel so bad for Dr. Octopus, who's probably going to die no matter what.
Yeah. Well, he was the only one that was really fixed, like to a point where he didn't lose his ability.
Oh no, Norman is the one that is, he did the 180. Norman is a whole new man. You got to think, he's not the Green Goblin anymore. The Green Goblin is gone. Right. So if you send Norman back to that time, you know, because the Nexus event, man, the event that pulled them in is like around the time they learned who Spider-Man is.
Yeah.
So Green Goblin finds out at the dinner party in the first movie. Mm-hmm. So if you send him back there, you know, you get a Norman Osborn who doesn't go on attack Aunt May. He doesn't kidnap.
Yeah, that's Jane. A good point.
He doesn't die. Harry doesn't get this obsession with Spider-Man. Who knows what happens in that timeline with Dr. Octopus, because Norman is still alive and he knows these things about him now. Whereas Dr. Octopus, he finds out, he even says it himself, what scene he's in, you know, like, I had Spider-Man by the neck.
Right.
You go back to that. He has to kill himself to destroy that sun he's generating.
Yeah. And even if he's going back as a hero, he would kill himself.
He's got to die. Like, that's somebody, you know, like, you know what? Maybe I should stay here.
Right.
If he knows his fate, maybe he stays.
Yeah, that sacrifice happens no matter what. Because mm-hmm. what I like about what happened with his redemption is we get to see more of him as a quote-unquote good guy.
Yeah.
Because I never really looked at Doc Ock as a real villain. He was more of a sympathetic figure. Mm-hmm. And I always feel like sympathetic figures, they made the best villains.
Absolutely.
Because the best villain is the type of guy that you look at and you're like, you know what? If things had been different, then you can see how, you know, he could be a superhero as mm-hmm. opposed to a villain. It's just that he ended up in a certain situation and basically lost his willpower. You know, he was and what I like about Doc Ock is he had the foresight to create that chip that controlled the arms. He had the foresight because he understood that without that, his higher functions could be at risk. But then when they had that accident, the chip got shorted, and that was, you know, kind of the end of him as a person. You know, the arms took over. I love that he was able to regain control, and mm-hmm. he pretended like he was a villain at first in No Way Home. And then I love that he flipped the script at the end, and he was like, nah, I'm actually on your side, Peter. You know, and he helped to fend off those villains. I thought that was, you know, it was nice to see him get that arc where he gets full redemption. Because I feel like in Spider-Man 2, we see it. But then right after that, he kills himself to save New York.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that was satisfying to me.
I really want to talk about that Doc Ock redemption, because a lot of these villains, a lot of Spider-Man's villains, especially the ones that we see in this movie, none of them are bad guys, you know?
No.
Like, you can separate Norman from the Green Goblin. And aside from that, is, you know, everybody, a scientist who had a very bad day, or Flint Marko, a regular guy who just had a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
But I think about Dr. Octopus, and his redemption has always been a little bit deeper for me, because if we think back to the scene where, you know, the chip fries in his head, you know, Spider-Man is telling him, hey, look, you have to turn this machine off. It's going crazy. And he's like, no, I can control it. And that leads to his work being destroyed, his wife dying, and him turning into a monster. That's like his Uncle Ben situation, or his Aunt May situation, or his Gwen situation. And mm-hmm. instead of overcoming it, he went into the darkness. I think he's a great parallel for Spider-Man in that sense, because he was not responsible. And because of it, he lost a loved one. It's directly his fault. Mm-hmm. And instead of, you know, owning up to that, he's like going on this insane ego trip. Like, I'm going to finish what I started.
Yep.
So great, great villains. And I can't even speak on like how good Willem Dafoe was in this.
Willem Dafoe came back and just slapped this role all around. Like, the way he did it the first time was great. But the way he did it this time was just so much more. I feel like we got a chance to really see how maniacal the Green Goblin is, and especially when he has the ability to work with a team of you know, highly powered, like, you know, criminals. Like, to see him before, when he's by himself, he's doing his thing, but he's still learning. He's still coming to his own. At this point, we see a Green Goblin who is fairly much more like the one that we get in the comic books, and at least the ones that we got in the animated series. And it's just like, it almost like pains me to see like like that Green Goblin's like dead at this point, because it's like, dang, man, like we needed that role again. Like the, you said it best, like the Sam Raimi films really knocked it out of the park when it comes to the villains. And a lot of that comes from the fact that, you know, the people they chose to act these roles, like the villains that we get now in the MCU are, you know, after Loki and Thanos, they're like few and far between, like as far as like how good they are in terms of like screen time or how captivating they are. But the minute William Dafoe stepped on the scene, and every moment since, it was just like perfect.
Another thing about William Dafoe's Green Goblin, he wanted to do his own like bike scenes. And I feel like that paid off dividends. It never really dawned on me that this version of Spider-Man, like Tom Holland's Spider-Man, aside from Thanos, he's fighting people he is leagues stronger than.
Mm-hmm.
And it really showed when he goes up against Toby and Andrew's villains, and they're like strong like they, I like when he was chasing the lizard or something, and the lizard, Green Goblin just got done whooping his ass. He's chasing Lizard. Lizard throws him back into the building. Green Goblin like body slams him through floors to the bottom. I was just like, oh my God. This nigga. Yes.
Like, he was getting destroyed in that Green Goblin fight. But I thought was really interesting? Spider-Man going at Green Goblin. Tom Holland Spider-Man, mm-hmm. and Green Goblin is just destroying him. And it's funny to me that it took, see, I like that we saw a glimpse into just how strong Spider-Man can be when he tapped into that rage from Aunt May's death. And then all of a sudden the fight just turned around and he was destroying the Green Goblin.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show you're going against all these villains that are, you know, basically regular people. And like Chris said, when you go up against someone who's strong, you got to raise your game. It doesn't mean that you're capable of it, but there was never the need, you know? So now when you face a villain that is on your level or maybe a little bit stronger, now you've got to elevate yourself in order to take them down. And that was another aspect of the growth. See, we've seen the growth of him as a hero, but I saw the growth of his powers and how he was able to tap into his strength that was always there. It's just that I don't think he was ever really challenged enough, because as I said earlier, the stakes in his movies were never really high enough. You know, now he's in a life or death situation and he's lost someone close to him, and he's channeling that pain into rage, to the point where Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man has to step in to stop him from crossing that line. And that was a moment. I love when Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man just kind of, you know, just gives him that look.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like the look to me, it says, hey, it's like someone more experienced who's been there, who says, you don't want to go down this road.
Yeah, and I've been here.
Yeah, I love when Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man talked about that guy that killed Uncle Ben, because I always got the feeling they never in the movie, they never really addressed it. But technically, he didn't kill the guy, but
he fell out the window.
He easily could have saved him.
He didn't save him either. Could have easily saved the guy. So he always, like, you know, even in Spider-Man 3, when he's arguing with MJ, and he said, hey, I didn't kill that guy. But at the same time, I'm looking at him and I'm like, yeah, but you didn't save him either. So I think there's a little bit of guilt there. And I think he wanted to kind of stop Tom Holland's Spider-Man from killing this guy, because he's like, look, you're going to have to live with this guilt for the rest of your life. Just like I had to live with it, because even though I didn't kill that guy, me not saving him is just as bad. So that was a beautiful moment between them. And it was a look. He didn't have to say anything, but I understood what that meant. It's like, don't do this to yourself, because you're going to have to live with it.
I also love that it was Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man that caught him, not Andrew Garfield's, because you can kind of see that. And he mentioned it. He's like, there's a point where he stopped pulling his punches. So he's still going through this bitterness. Dead, yeah, this is Andrew's. I'm talking about Andrew's. Like,
oh, yeah.
And that's what I was like, I'm happy that it wasn't him, because you could tell that he's still like, this moment, all of this stuff that was going on was pivotal for his Spider-Man as a whole. He really needed everything that was happening as far as meeting them to seeing like, okay, I know what it's like to be where he is, and I can see where I'm going as well. And I love how like, like he almost like he, you know, his connection as like he viewed them as the brothers. So like you could tell, like, and I was thinking about this the other day, like he's the only Spider-Man who didn't really have that best friend tagging along the whole time. And he didn't have that connection to anyone else but Gwen. And then when Gwen dies, he talks about it like he's alone. Like he's literally out there just fighting crime, but at this point he's bitter. He has no connection to what he's doing anymore. He's just doing it because he has nothing else to do. And I think seeing his little brother going through this pain that he knows, seeing his older brother, you know, stopping him from being what, you know, he's already seen. It's like, I think it was the perfect, like, you know, mixture of situations that could lead him to being what he needs to be next. And I don't think he was ready to like stop him because he's still there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some great points. I like when Gareth pointed out like the evolution of his powers. We got to talk about that scene where Spider-Man steals the box and Doctor Strange knocks his astral form out. And you can see the his spider sense in his astral form as his physical body is keeping Doctor Strange from touching that, that cube. And a lot of people online seem to think that it's connected to the web of life and destiny in the comics and how all the Spider-Men are connected through this this giant web. And that's like kind of what their spider sense are. And that shows like his spider sense is another thing that's evolved throughout the course of these movies. Very subtle. In Civil War, almost didn't even think it was there by some of the things that happened to him. And then we see skipping Homecoming, going to Infinity War. We saw it, his hairs on his arms raise up when the Thanos' army comes. And then in Far From Home, a lot of that was based on the Peter Tingle, you know, him being able to use that to defeat Mysterio. And I really think that the spider sense that he had in this movie, you know, this is a fully awakening of Spider-Man. Like when we see him in his next movie, he's going to have the classic suit, the web shooters, you know, everything's homemade. He's getting his GED. I want to throw out this possible theory. Peter Parker to the world no longer exists. What if the MCU Tom Holland starts going by Ben Reilly? That his suit from Homecoming was very reminiscent to Ben Reilly's suit. It might be a way to get rid of any confusion surrounding Peter Parker. Maybe they find out Peter Parker is Spider-Man. They don't have any pictures of him. I know the videos are out there. Let's suspend disbelief for a bit, but could he go by another name? And could it be Ben Reilly?
That would be a way to transition.
And it could leave the door open for more of Andrew Garfield as Peter Parker Spider-Man movies, which I think a lot of people want now, because I feel like as much as we've talked about Willem Dafoe, Alfred Molina, Andrew Garfield in his limited role really, like, it was a chef kiss performance.
Oh, yes.
Everything he's been doing. And I know Tom Holland was a Spider-Man fan growing up, but I've seen interviews where Andrew Garfield is literally geeking out about, like, them being on set, and he's like, I'm with the Spider-Man I looked up to, and I'm looking at the Spider-Man and look how talented he is. And, you know, they're all in the suit pointing at each other. They're doing the meme and everything. And Andrew Garfield is my favorite Spider-Man. I think he does the best Spider-Man. I feel like his Peter Parker was let down just because there's so much of a focus on Gwen Stacy in his movies and the whole parent thing. But I would not be upset about seeing him be the Peter Parker going forward in these movies. especially since it's hinted at that he's going to be in the Venom Morbius universe that they've got, him being that Spider-Man.
I see. I prefer that. Yeah, I like that. I'm not actually mad at that, because that's a good way to transition it, where you get both of them and you can still maintain Toby in a way if you just keep going that way. I didn't even think about that. And Marvel is kind of good for, or excuse me, the MCU is really good for making those little small transitions. So to just make him Ben Reilly, that fits. Like, he's got to be somebody. Peter Parker doesn't exist. The only connection he had to Peter Parker was May. Yeah, I wouldn't be mad at that at all.
That would be interesting. It certainly would be a way for us to transition, you know, maybe, maybe like the comic books where you had, like, you know, the Scarlet Spider.
Right.
You know, we could do something with that storyline. I like it.
And if you think about it like that, like, to take that even further, like, Ben Reilly was the more, probably, I would say, more of a futuristic like Spider-Man. Like, his connection to Happy is going to happen again. We saw, like, they already were at the gravesite together. So the odds, and Happy still has all of Tony's stuff. So the odds that, you know, he wouldn't start again, and Happy is going to have to find some sort of connection, if that's not just, you know, watching after Morgan now. Like, what's to stop them from, you know, him outfitting the new Spider-Man?
And what's stopping Sony from trying to get more money by capitalizing?
Put on both of them. Like, that makes sense.
See, I want more Andrew Garfield Spider-Man for the simple fact that, see, this movie, for me, seeing Andrew Garfield in there, it really, really warmed my heart, for the simple fact that, for two reasons. One, for his character. When we see his character last, and I think this is the only Spider-Man movie that we've ever seen do this to Spider-Man. When we see him last, he's in a dark place. And unfortunately, it was like a cliffhanger, because we had just seen Gwen die. And he's depressed. It's very obvious, you know, he's depressed. And the movie kind of ends right there. I guess the understanding was, all right, we're going to pick up in part three, and then we'll see where we go with the next chapter. And that never happened. So Peter was kind of like in limbo. And then Andrew Garfield was in limbo, because he didn't get that trilogy. You know, you take this job as Spider-Man, you kind of understand, you know, it's going to be at a minimum three movies. He got cut short at two. And not only did he get cut short at two, his character underwent like a huge transformation in the second one, because he suffered a massive tragedy.
Right.
And I felt like No Way Home was kind of like therapy. It was therapy.
Yeah.
And it was therapy for Andrew Garfield. And now I'm looking. And another thing, too, that I thought of when you guys were speaking earlier was, He never got his MJ.
Nope, he didn't.
That's the thing. So I love the fact that I'm looking at what he went through with Gwen, and I'm thinking to myself, him going to another universe and seeing Peter, you know, Tom Holland's Peter, and his connection with his MJ, and also hearing you know, Tobey Maguire's Peter talk about him, you know, working things out with MJ, even though they have challenges. It makes me wonder now, when he goes back to his own universe, could we see a situation where, obviously, he's still grieving, but eventually finding his own MJ in his time, and, you know, carving out a piece of happiness for himself? Because
Toby did tell him to keep looking.
Yeah, because he deserves it, man. He deserves it. And we just want to see him happy.
I got one better for you. Future movie, what if he runs into a Spider-Gwen?
That's what I want.
Hey,
that's what I'm going for.
I would not be mad at that.
You know, like,
let that man get his Gwen back.
I'd not be mad at that. But are they bringing Emma Stone back, though? That's the
they could, but I feel like if you do it, I don't know at that point, because it's like, wouldn't that be weird for him?
It really would.
Like, to have to learn to love a new Gwen is not as strange as...
Not from a love interest standpoint. I think that Andrew is going to go back to his timeline and find his own Mary Jane. And I would love to see that in a third movie. But I feel like there's a sense of closure for both of them there, knowing the, you know, and Spider-Gwen's universe, you know, she loses Peter Parker, and this Spider-Man has failed to Gwen. This is an opportunity for the both of them to kind of get some type of closure. Because of,
you know, even to fight together, just be like, okay, like, I know that you're safe in this universe. It's like, I'm gonna do right by you as I should have before.
Right. Saying, you know, he could be talking to this Gwen, saying the things he wish he could say. Because let's not forget the awesome moment he had of saving MJ.
MJ.
And just that look that he gave her, and when he asked her if she was okay, and it's like, you know, that's the first thing he asked her, because he was like, I remember the last time I did this, it didn't work. Somebody got hurt. Yeah. He's like, are you okay? She's like, yes, I'm fine. He's just like, man, I know that had to mean so much for him.
Yeah. And what if, in a way, like, that's their way of saying he will find his MJ, because he was able to catch MJ, but he wasn't able to save Gwen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's his maturing point. Because if you look at it, because I went back and tried to see what happened differently the last time, the way that he even jumped at MJ was different this time.
Yeah, it was. You think about that when he shoots out the web, and it was so different from in the comics, because in the comics, you know, he thinks he saved her. You know, she dies from the whiplash. In the movie, I couldn't tell if it was the whiplash that did it.
It looked like the whiplash did that. But
she also hit the ground. he wasn't quick enough. She hit the ground. So it was this combination of double homicide.
Ali Andrew.
But
he did it this time. He got it.
He did it.
He did well
this time. You know, even his interactions, everything, every time Andrew was on the screen, man, I think about when he was talking to Electro, he was like, dude from Queens working to save people. I thought you'd be black. Man, I'm sorry. that's Spider-Man. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's like,
could that mean Miles Morales is around the corner?
You know, I feel like in these new MCU trilogies, I feel like it would be perfect introducing him somewhere around the line. We know he exists from Spider-Man Homecoming. We saw Prowler having a conversation with Miles on the phone. So that was only a matter of time.
Now, if it was you guys, now would you take Spider-Gwen and put him in the MCU and then take Miles and put him with Andrew and Venom, or would you switch it up? Because I would prefer to see Andrew's Peter Parker be with the Miles Morales, as opposed to if they go with this Ben Reilly thing, which I really feel like that just seems very MCU. And like I said, he has to have a name. Like, so why wouldn't they just, they already have a character, like, he's some brand new person. That's the easiest way to do it. So I'm just going to go with right now, Tom Holland's Ben. So would you keep Ben and Miles, or would you keep Peter and Miles?
And the MCU?
If you were to go, because if they separated and they're saying that Andrew Garfield is supposed to be in, you know, the Sony-verse with, you know, Venom and Morbius and stuff like that, would you then maintain Miles on that side, or would you allow him to go to the MCU for future endeavors like, you know, Young Avengers and stuff like that?
I think Miles would stay in the MCU. I think they'd introduce him eventually in this new Spider-Man trilogy. And I'm all for them killing Tom Holland's Spider-Man.
I feel like he seems like he's about done with it, or is at least after this contract, he's trying to move on to other things. And if he stays here too long, he's going to get like kind of typecasted. So it's like, he really only got so much time. But he's still, what, 24 years old? Like, if he can get out by, like, 28, like, he should be all right.
But he said he doesn't want to do it in his 30s. So it's like,
you know what I'm saying?
You got time for a couple movies, and then bring in Miles Morales, and then Andrew Garfield. He loves being Spider-Man. Let that carry through. Maybe we'll get another one later on down the line. But I'm not going to say I am attached to the Tom Holland Spider-Man as much as I was to the other ones.
Me neither.
Yeah.
I feel like this just kind of reinvigorated the love for the other ones too. You just kind of want to see like them get that highlight now, because we know there's so much more in movies nowadays. So you could, even just seeing like their villains, like you can do so much more. So
there was so much studio interference on Spider-Man 3. Was it Sam Raimi? He wanted Sandman to be the villain, and you know, the studio was pushing for him to include Venom. And you know, we also had that Harry Osborn thread left undone. There was a lot going on in that movie, and I feel like that's why in the third movie you usually see it where it's the weakest one, because there's so much that needs to be done. And nowadays, you know, you get more than a trilogy. You've got this connected universe. And I feel like a lot of the third movies are some of the better ones, like Thor Ragnarok, Civil War, No Way Home. These third movies are knocking it out of the park, because, yes, this trilogy is over, but the character is not done. They're going to still pop up. There's still going to be development. This is just closing one piece of it. And in Spider-Man 3, there was just too much in there. Mm-hmm. And so I would love to see a Spider-Man 4. I would love to see Andrew Garfield continue with Sony's Spider-Man movies. They can do their own Spider-Man movies with Andrew Garfield. Maybe he crosses over to the MCU every now and then. And then Tom Holland finishes off this trilogy, and eventually they introduce a Miles Morales.
I'll be with it.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And yeah, I'd love to see more Andrew Garfield, even though I would say if I'm ranking my Spider-Man, it would be, I think I'd have to say Tobey Maguire first. Mm-hmm. Andrew Garfield would be second, and then Tom Holland would be third. Mm-hmm. But if you ask me right now, which one I'd like to see more movies of, I wouldn't go with my favorite. I'd go with Andrew Garfield, because I do feel like, even though Spider-Man 3, the original trilogy, I didn't think that Spider-Man 3 was as good as it could have been, but I did feel like there was closure. Mm-hmm. You know, they wrapped up all the threads they needed to wrap up, you know, with Harry and MJ and the villains. Everything was kind of tied up in a neat bow. You know, whether you like the outcome or not, that's a completely different story. But, you know, Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man got no closure at all. And that's what I feel like No Way Home attempted to do. Give him some closure, because I've never seen a situation where you kind of leave a major character like that hanging. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we were waiting for that third Amazing Spider-Man movie, and it just never came. I'm seeing a lot of rumblings online about it possibly coming out, you know, under the Sony umbrella. I'm praying that that actually happens, because seeing these characters again, sometimes you see characters again and you're like, okay, now I'm good. I don't need any more. But for me, and Andrew Garfield Spider-Man again, it had like the opposite effect. When the movie ended, I'm like, I want to see more of that. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see more.
I like how they kind of did that too. It's like Toby kind of jumped in, and it's like, oh, you can tell he's reserved. Like, he's definitely a seasoned Spider-Man. Yeah. He's out. He looked like it. Like, he truly looked like it. Like, he's out here, you know, to school the youth on the next steps for it. Like, Andrew, he has so much going on already. And I love how he was able to just pick up that. It's like, you can tell it's been some time and he's still been like really fighting through this. But I feel like now we're at a point where he's ready to take the next step. And I think this movie really made us want to see what that next step is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And all of their movies, if we look at the last movie they've all been in, Amazing Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man 3, and No Way Home, it all ends on a very, you know, sad but somewhat optimistic note. You think of at the end of Spider-Man, it's like him and Mary Jane just went through all that. Harry's dead. Mm-hmm. Where does that leave their relationship? At the end of Amazing Spider-Man 2, he goes to fight Rhino, and it ends in that clip where he definitely... Let's be real here. Rhino should be dead after he hits him with that manhole cover. And I think that's when we get the glimpse of that he wasn't holding his punches anymore. And then in this one, this Spider-Man is, you know, alone. And he's got to get a GED. There's no records of him. And yet he's still out there swinging around because his first priority now is protecting the city, you know? So
he gets to be the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
He has to be the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. But it's great, great movie. And, you know, we're definitely going to talk a lot more about this, but I also want to talk about some speculation and some things that we could see on the horizon after a word from our sponsor. Welcome back to the Nerding with Friends podcast. I'm C-Ro. I'm joined with Codename and Gareth, and we're talking about the best Spider-Man movie we've seen in a very, very long time, live action wise. I didn't forget about you, Spider-Verse. So let's talk about
that second one too.
Let's talk about this Furious Five, because I won't call them the Sinister Six because they're missing somebody.
Right.
Of all the villains that could have been in this movie, I'm going to start with Gareth. Who would you have included to make this a Sinister Six?
I'm looking at someone who we haven't seen thus far. And a character that I've always liked would be Kraven. You know, I would love to see Kraven and live action. We haven't seen it yet. And, you know, I just remember reading the Spider-Man comic books and, you know, just being fascinated by him. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to see a live action Kraven and see, you know, what they could do with that. So that'll be my pick.
I think they were going to include him in there. You know, Aaron Taylor Johnson. Cast as him, the Quicksilver from Age of Ultron is playing Kraven in the Sonyverse.
Oh, nice.
What about you, Codename?
I think I honestly would have just brought back Condor just to make it easy.
Vulture?
Thank you, Vulture. Mm-hmm. Because he already knows him. You know, he is in that universe, and he is a member of the Sinister Six. So just to wrap it up there. Mm-hmm. I feel like that would have been the easiest because, like, we already kind of know his motives. Like, he definitely would have operated this way. He would have been all for, you know, hopping on board with what they got going on. So
I like both of those. Seeing somebody new being introduced, you know, the first villain that Tom Holland really faced on his own. Mm-hmm. My pick would have been the MCU Scorpion. The one that he stops in No Way Home, because this one has a true vendetta against Spider-Man. And remember, at the end of Homecoming, he was trying to figure out, talking to Vulture, like, hey, I heard you know who he is. Now that this information is public, I can see him, you know, getting out. It would have been nice to see him get the suit. You know, Matt Gargan is a character I don't think a lot of people took seriously because of the animated show, but he is a threat, and this Matt Gargan we saw has a little bit of the elements from, you know, both your responses. Like, he's going to be hunting Spider-Man, and he's somebody that came from the original movie solo outing. So I would have loved to see Scorpion be more than just a name drop in the credits. But little known fact or fun fact, whatever you want to call it, Venom was actually supposed to show up in that final battle after being pulled over from the Venomverse, I guess we can call it that. And Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man was supposed to die in the movie, and the Venom symbiote would have latched on to him to bring him back to life. So we would have got Black Suit Tobey again.
Oh, that'd been a lot.
Wow.
Yeah. That would have been a lot.
That would have been a lot. Now, I'm not saying I'm glad they didn't do it. I still enjoyed the movie, but, like, I don't know if I could be sitting in the theater watching all that and be like, oh my God, like, what?
Yeah, that's just so much on the screen. Like, it would have taken away from a lot. It had to.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, the future, this is another thing that I'm really excited about for this new trilogy in Spider-Man, because we know the best thing about Spider-Man is he's a normal person like you and me. He gets frustrated. Mm-hmm. Gareth, I know you've got a young son. I know you know what it's like to just, you know, you know, like having to control, you know, when he's crying, he won't stop crying. He's like, man, come on, man, come on.
Yep.
We have the Venom symbiote in the MCU right now, and we have a Spider-Man who is arguably at one of his lowest moments.
Let's see where you're
this symbiote has to make its way to Tom Holland at some point.
The question is, who is it gonna help? Who else is gonna hit first?
First, it doesn't have to hit anybody first, because this is the symbiote that's come, like, it's already gone. It's the symbiote from Eddie Brock. You know what I mean? So it can kind of just like hitchhike its way to Spider-Man.
It will likely go. You know what? That's a good point that you mentioned that, because it's the symbiote who met Eddie Brock, it's the only symbiote who would have seen him still. He's not. They're not from that universe. Would they forget them? Because they didn't know Peter Parker. They just know the face.
I don't know if that spell would. You know, that's another thing about the spell that was cast. You know, like, there's a lot of gray in that. You know, like, when he cast it, did that affect the other Spider-Man universes? Is Toby going to go back to a universe and MJ not know who he is? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, or did it just affect the MCU? I'm hoping it just affected the
MCU. I feel like it only affected the MCU, but my question is, to what degree does it affect everything that, like... Do you see a person that looks like Tom Holland, Spider-Man, and is just like a blur ass face, or like what's the deal here? Is it just some dude you don't know?
I just think that it doesn't know that it's Spider-Man, but I feel like if the spell only affected people from that universe, the reason Venom was pulled over to the MCU when the spell was cast is because we know that it affected everybody that knows Peter Parker.
And
Spider-Man. So, in the second Venom movie, Venom is telling Eddie Brock that the symbiotes work on a hive mind that spreads across different universes. So, if one symbiote knows Spider-Man is Peter Parker, they all know Spider-Man is Peter Parker. So that's why I don't know how the spell would work in that sense. What I really do not want to happen in the MCU is Agent Venom.
Yeah, I stay the hell away from Flash.
I do not like this Flash Thompson.
Yeah, stay the hell away from be Flash. Agent
Venom. Yeah,
like, I'm not even against Agent Villain, but just don't be Flash Thompson.
I would love to get Agent Venom. And the Sonyverse, I liked the Flash Thompson and the Andrew Garfield movies.
Yes.
You know, he was around for those two movies, but he was a jerk. But we saw when Uncle Ben died, he was there for Peter in a sense. You know, he like walked up to him. He was like making sure he was okay. Like, he's not one of those 90s, early 2000s high school bullies where they're just like a obnoxious person. There's some humanity in there that can be salvaged. And I feel like that would be great to see Agent Venom show up in that version. But MCU, it's got to get to Peter when he's at his lowest. You know what I mean? Like, that would be
a reason to bring in a Kraven.
Yeah.
It would be a reason. To stop Black's Kraven. Two slider.
Yeah, and that would tie into that whole, you know, the storyline from the comic books. Mm-hmm. You know, where Kraven is going at it with Spider-Man, and it's Black Suit Spider-Man. So I would love to see that on a big screen.
And I would love for this trilogy or some type of Spider-Verse movie to happen, a live action one. I said it in the last show, I love those 90s Spider-Man, the Spider-Verse episode with Madame Web. I would love to see a live action version of Madame Web bringing all the different Spider-Men, Spider-People together, and them going up against an evil Spider-Man. Maybe that is the Tom Holland Spider-Man who's got the Venom symbiote. Maybe it's another Spider-Man who's got the Carnage symbiote, like in the show.
I'd be okay with them bringing back just Ben like Riley. A bunch of... Right.
You'd be okay with them what?
Bringing back Carnage?
Yeah, there's so many things that can happen in the future. Another thing I want to talk about is when we saw reality break and some of the silhouettes we saw. I made out Rhino. I think I saw somebody with a spear that could have been Kraven. Mm-hmm. I've seen some ramblings online that somebody saw Madame Web, somebody saw an archer, somebody that looked like Spider-Gwen, whatever, just a slender figure. Mm. So what other Spider-Man characters are you guys looking forward to seeing in the MCU or the Sonyverse? And please specify so we can, you know, kind of see where they would fit in the grand scheme of things. Because if we look at the Sonyverse, you've got Morbius, the Lizard, but not even the Lizard. We just got Morbius and Venom Carnage right now, right? Mm-hmm. I believe that Carnage will come back. We got symbiotes and we got Morbius. I'll say that.
Right. Symbiotes and Morbius right now. Symbiotes, Morbius, Andrew Garfield. I would like to see Spider-Gwen. I said that weird. I feel like to see Spider-Gwen in... I want to see that in her in the Sonyverse. I want to see Spider-Man 99 in the MCU. I want him to actually be trying to go after our black-suited spider along with Kraven. Mm-hmm. And then they get to a point where they have to stop Kraven together or something. But I would want it to be a situation where, for some reason, Tom Holland is being hunted down. Like, I want him to kind of go through it for a little bit. Like, he still has a little more growing to do for me. Other than that, I think I would like to also see more I would just like to see more symbiotes as a whole. Like, I want a full symbiote verse, because I know that happened. Like, I would like it to get kind of out of hand a little bit in the MCU.
Hmm. What about you, Gary?
For me, it's got to be Miles Morales. I'd love to see Miles Morales in the MCU, because I feel like was it Homecoming where we got that little teaser?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Childish Gambino.
Yes, you know, and I would love to see that. And we were talking about, you know, just how much longer is Tom Holland going to play Spider-Man? I mean, if you think about it, he's already had more Spider-Man movies at his young age than any other Spider-Man actor. If you include the Avengers movies, you know, I think he's got six movies under his belt now. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of begs the question. It's like, and with him, you know, branching off into other things, you know, he's becoming like a big star. You know, he's got Uncharted. Mm-hmm. He's got all this other stuff. How much longer do we realistically think he's going to keep playing Spider-Man? So the perfect way to have that transition, we could have Miles Morales come in, you know, and he could slide into that role as a mentor, you know, for like a younger Spider-Man coming up. So that's one way you could do it.
Right. I just feel like, I'm with you on that. Like, I feel like Tom is not going to make it out of, like, he may make it out of this phase, but I feel like this will be the last one for him. Like, this set of three, basically everything that may be going on with Kang and all of that. Like, once that's done, I feel like so will Tom Holland be as Spider-Man. And by then, I think we would have seen some sort of a transition. Now, there has been some talks or him actually saying that he would like to see Gwen Stacy, like a Spider-Gwen, kind of pick up the mantle. But I feel like because they've already led to Miles Morales, it's a possibility that they both can run it together. Right now, like, if you think about it, whether it's into the Spider-Verse or even in the comic books, the two are dating. So there's no reason why they couldn't both be there.
You could give them a younger Gwen, because, you know, Ned Leeds, they pretty much just took Miles Morales' sidekick, best friend from the comics, and gave him Hobgoblin's name, pretty much.
Right. Which you could still kind of go with that, too, like him actually becoming the Hobgoblin now. They don't know each other, and he's going to be a mechanic.
What?
Or
the engineer.
Engineer, thank you.
Mm-hmm. But the character I would like to see show up in the Sonyverse would have to be Blade. Especially, you've got Morbius, just a darker. I feel like that would be. I love Mahershala Ali as an actor. Yeah. I feel like that could be a situation where they might give it an R rating, you know, and it just takes me back to the 90s and the Spider-Man show where you got Blade, Morbius, and Spider-Man not really teaming up, but it's like this three-way fight between the three of them. Nobody's mm-hmm. really good or evil, just a misunderstanding.
Right.
And for the original MCU, I would love to see Punisher show up because I forget his name, John Bernthal.
Bernthal, yep, yeah.
And Tom Holland, they actually auditioned together to get those roles of Punisher and Spider-Man. And
that's awesome.
The Punisher have gone on record and saying that, you know, if he's going to come back to play Punisher, he doesn't want it to be in that Disney vein where everything's all watered down and kid-friendly. Mm-hmm. But I feel like he can make an exception for Spider-Man and Tom Holland.
Right. Especially if his black suit is Spider-Man and, like, him happen to be a part of that. Like, that just makes everything.
Oh, no. Not black suit Spider-Man, because we're going to pull heavy from this 90s show.
Okay.
I want to see him go up against Man Spider.
Okay. I'm with it.
Because now you've got, you know, Tom Holland is going to go through a lot of things, and he's going to go through them alone. I can see him having the kind of problems that Toby had in Spider-Man 2, where his powers are failing him one way or another. And he feels like maybe, you know, he's losing his powers. He's got to do something to keep his powers going. He ends up creating a formula that mutates him. Nobody knows how to save him. You know, and this whole time, maybe MJ and Ned are out there somewhere. Maybe they're the ones that come up with a cure to save him. That's how they get brought back into his life and something happens. And then they end it with Black Suit Spider-Man in the third movie. There's so much lore
I like to pull
from in Spider-Man.
That would be wild.
Yeah.
That'd be wild.
And with the direction that they're going as far as a little bit darker, what they're saying, like they want the the Multiverse of Madness to be like the first MCU horror film. Like that would definitely be one of those, you know, kind of horror-esque or grotesque type movies that they could do with the Spider-Man, which they haven't done before. Like, why not? If you can do what you did with No Way Home from all the other two movies, as far as like a complete theme shift, there's no reason why you couldn't continue like kind of pushing the buttons a little bit. People love horror films. People love Spider-Man films. Like they tried to do that with X-Men. And I feel like the only reason why it didn't succeed is because the movie wasn't long enough.
Speaking of Spider-Man No Way Home, another thing that kind of bugged me about the Spider-Man trilogy, this new one, is Tom Holland and Zendaya's relationship. Like, not their personal relationship. They're adorable in real life. But Peter Parker and MJ, I was just never really sold on it being that. It's nowhere near Gwen and Peter in the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
Not at all.
That's definitely the strongest relationship. Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man with what is her name?
Kirsten Dunst.
With her Mary Jane. That was a very toxic relationship.
It was toxic.
Like Toby said, they're still trying to work out the kinks. In the first Homecoming movie, we saw that Spider-Man wanted Liz Allen. Funny note, if you watch the movie again, I forgot what scene it is. It's somewhere before Alfred Molina's octopus shows up. There's a magazine stand with Liz Allen on the cover calling Spider-Man a liar. Like she's interviewed him from when they went to Homecoming together. I thought that was a crazy callback.
I missed that.
Yeah, you got to check for that next time. It's the little things. But she wasn't really in the first movie. And then the second one was just like all about him liking her. And I'm just like, where did this come from? Like what all this stuff had to have happened off screen. And Far From Home was probably one of my least favorite Spider-Man movies, honestly. Like, I just like the whole Mysterio and everything. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they could have done a lot better. Like, Mysterio, I'm not going to say he's an obscure Spider-Man villain, but I think it was done mainly for the whole aspect of, you know, Tony Stark and his relationship. Mm-hmm. Especially when you have so many villains you introduced in the first one. Shocker, Tinker, Vulture, Scorpion. All these guys could have came back. I remember when they first started the Spider-Man, this Spider-Man trilogy, they were going to say, oh, this is going to be about a high school Spider-Man dealing with high school things. And it's like, no.
That was not it at all.
It's Homecoming, and then he's off in Europe on a trip after a blip, and they're like, there's no schooling. We don't see that having to lie to be in this other place, and it messes up his home relationships.
Yeah, it never really felt like he was living in the two worlds that Doctor Strange mentioned.
It didn't really feel like it. And, you know, I just don't know. I didn't see the attraction or the connection between the two characters. Like, even in Homecoming, like, their interactions are so far and not, you know, there's nothing there for me to believe, like, oh, now he just mm-hmm. he just want, why do you like her? She's smart, but it's like,
and you know, I want to key in on that, like, even when they were talking about, like, their whole reason, his whole reason in this movie for liking her, he was just calling out stuff that didn't even really make sense. Like, she don't seem like she liked people at all. She didn't really care. It's like, she cared about sports. Like, just want all of these, like, random things that seem to be wrong. I don't know. Maybe that was just, like, sarcasm, but it's just, they never really seemed like there was a point where their connection kind of reigned supreme. It just seemed like he had this crush on this girl, and the only reason, like, he had a connection with her is because for 10 days he could be a normal high schooler when he told her. But other than that, there was just nothing really holding him. So his connection with Ned was stronger than his connection with her.
I agree with that, because at least in Spider-Man Homecoming, we saw that connection with Ned. Mm-hmm. You know, Ned was, you know, we saw the reaction Ned had, you know, when he learned Peter's secret for the first time. So they had all these moments. And I felt like even in Far From Home, and I'm going to agree with Chris on this, it was definitely my least favorite Spider-Man movie, because they just jammed so much in there. And I felt like the personal stuff, the little touches, like, okay, how is this relationship between Peter and MJ developing? Mm-hmm. They just glossed over all of that. So even the big reveal when MJ, you know, finds out who Peter is, it's kind of like, yeah, I already knew that. And I'm I just sucked the ear out of the room. Like, this huge reveal, the reveal with Ned was a bigger deal, you know, right. Because I love the fact that Peter comes in and Ned sees him in the costume and he's still trying to, like, argue his way out of it. And Ned's like, dude, you were on the ceiling, you know? Like, little things like that made it more realistic.
Right.
And the reveal with MJ for me in Far From Home, it just fell flat. You know, and I was like, man, you know, that it sucks, because I go all the way back to the original trilogy, and that reveal with Kirsten Dunst and you know, and Tobey Maguire, you know, right before they think they're gonna die. And I'm like, man, it's a perfect reveal, you know? Mm-hmm. And I love when that little moment where he says to her, remember when you asked me if I love you and I said no, and she's like, you do? And he's like, yeah, you know? And we needed a moment like that in Far From Home. We never got it. She says, oh, I already knew that. And it just kind of, you know.
Yeah.
And for them to just be, like, so close as they are, like, we have to assume, like, so much happens off screen, because we don't see we don't see them interact like we saw the original Spider-Man and MJ and Spider-Man and Gwen in the previous trilogies, the previous movies we saw.
Right. But it's just not, the connection is just not the same.
I mean, if Vulture is not Liz Allen's dad, is MJ even in the picture?
Probably not.
You know, like, MJ was there this whole time and he's got feelings for Liz. So you take Liz out, now it's like she's a consolation prize. And, you know, you could make the same argument about Gwen dying and now he's stuck with MJ. But even then, you see the relationship build and develop over all the different issues, and, you know, her with Harry and her with Flash and him, Betty Branch. And there's so much that leads them to each other. You know, they really have to figure out who they are. And I feel like we could really get that with this Andrew Garfield, the Spider-Man movies, if they want to continue with those.
Agree.
More Andrew Garfield, please.
More. Please and thank you.
Andrew Garfield, please.
Yep.
Man, so Doctor Strange in this movie, I understand, you know, he was trying to do the right thing, but this, I feel like this was very out of character for him in many ways. And I was on the camp that this wasn't the Doctor Strange we know because of, you know, just how out of character it was.
Right.
But looking forward into the Multiverse of Madness, Doctor Strange erases everybody's memory of what happened, of knowing Peter Parker. And we saw in the trailer for Multiverse of Madness, he goes to Wanda asking for her help. This makes me think, did he forget that he cast this spell and all the multiverse shenanigans that went on because he forgot that Spider-Man is Peter Parker? Or does he remember doing this for Spider-Man? Or
no, he forgot him too. No, he would have forgotten too. Because that, that was the last thing he said. He was like, like it was nice knowing you. Like, you don't know him anymore either.
Yeah, he forgot him.
Yeah, he put that spell on everybody, himself included.
So he had no idea what just transpired, basically.
Nope.
I don't think
so. I don't think all of this stuff is now happening, and he has no he doesn't know why. He just he just acknowledges, okay, oh, this stuff is just going down.
Right, because it wouldn't make any sense. Yeah, because it wouldn't make any sense for him to think about it. Mm-hmm. If he forgets who Spider-Man is, then the whole reason for the spell goes out the window. Because I'm creating this spell for Spider-Man because he's Peter Parker. If I forget Spider-Man is Peter Parker, then I have no reason to do the spell. So I don't think he remembers doing the spell at all.
Nope.
Yeah.
Because you remember he talked to, like, one of the first things he said is he talked to Wong about what Wong didn't remember. And he was saying that was the reason why, it was because of the room. So he just basically put a spell on himself, and now he has to face the repercussions of something that he doesn't even realize why.
But yeah, if he did that spell and he remembers, why wouldn't he remember this spell?
Because he did the spell on Wong as opposed to doing the spell on himself. In
is
this
that what
case,
he said?
Yeah, because the last time he used the ruins for Wong to forget something, it was a party.
I thought he would have used it on everybody. Why would he? I feel like that's a powerful spell to just use on one person.
Well, you would have used it on everybody but yourself. So he would have still remembered that one. But in this case, he did it on everybody except for Peter. So Peter's the only person who remembers. But he still would have to face the repercussions of it. Especially, I feel like this one was way bigger than whatever that party was.
God, I hate that. That is my biggest problem with the MCU. That,
hey, man, there's a reason why they say they hate magic. It don't make sense. And maybe we'll get some explanation, because they did very little to show exactly how Strange Supreme is there. I felt like even in the trailer, it seemed as though the narrator was actually Strange Supreme talking about how he got to where he was. Because at the end of the trailer, like when they get to showing who's doing the talking, they're showing Supreme. And at this point, his last words is things just got out of hand. And we know from, you know, the What If series is that is in reference to the death of Christine, which could now be acknowledged as an absolute point. So at some point in time, it's going to happen.
A lot going on in the MCU. I hope they continue to ride out this momentum, because I think about, was it last year? I think the last superhero movie we got before the end of the year was Wonder Woman 84. And I was just like, man, this Oh my God. Again, another movie I was looking forward to because of how much I enjoyed the first one. And yeah. And just the opposite with this, I was like, man, I did not like Far From Home, like whatever. Like, oh, they're gonna mess up Spider-Verse. But big shout out to Sam Raimi, Mark Webb, John Watts, all the directors of all the Spider-Man movies. Shout out to all the actors. This really came together to be, you know, it goes up there with a lot of the Spider-Verse content that we've seen mm-hmm. in comics, TV shows, and now live action. Like,
and that's hard to do.
It is. It's hard to do on the small screen, and they pulled it mm-hmm. off. Like the scene when the three of them, they like run into action and they're swinging off of each other's webs, and just like the best part of the movie was their interactions. I would love to see them yeah. interact more.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Tobey Maguire getting his back cracked and
yeah.
see, I love that scene because I love that they snuck that in there, but it made me laugh because of all the drama behind the mm-hmm. scenes. Mm-hmm. Remember when Spider-Man 2 was about to come out?
The Seabiscuit.
Yeah, and Tobey Maguire's back was all messed up. And mm-hmm. somehow it factored into the negotiations, you know, where it's like, well, you know, if the money is a certain amount, my back might be a little better, you know? So, you know, and then they were like, oh, is that right? Okay. Well, let's see what Jake Gyllenhaal has to yeah. say about that. And then all of a sudden, he's like, wait a second. My back. And then Sony's like, does it now? So, you know, there's a scene in Spider-Man 2 where he falls, right, where his powers are on the fritz.
And yeah.
He's like, oh, my back. And even way back in 2004, I laughed at that because of all the stuff.
Hilarious.
So to see that he still has, like, a back problem. Man, I'm glad that they put that in there because there's a lot behind the scenes when it comes to Tobey Maguire's back.
Yeah, like mm-hmm. even that, I think about Willem Dafoe when they locked him up and he was just waiting to say that. You know, I'm a bit of a scientist myself.
Oh. I love the callback to the original movie. That was nice. And can I just say, I didn't get into this earlier, but man, Willem Dafoe, what an incredible performance he turned in. For No Way Home. I was always a fan of his Goblin, but he just has a knack. And it's not just the maniacal laugh, mm-hmm. but even in his facial expressions.
Yes.
Facial expressions alone, you know, never mind the voice, but I was able to tell when he was switching from Norman Osborn
yes.
to Goblin just by looking at his face. I didn't even have to hear him laugh. I didn't have to yeah. hear the voice. And just, it was like, that
it had like a certain demeanor about yes, it, like it's just a like certain, a whole constant shift.
Yes, if you watch the first movie, he like does this thing where he like narrows his eyes and he like mm-hmm. brings his neck down, like he does, like it's a complete, like it's yes. a Jekyll Hyde type
yes. literally
transformation.
You know what it reminds me of? You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the transformation that Christopher Reeve would make when he was transitioning from Superman to Clark Kent or Clark Kent to Superman. Mm-hmm. It was little mm-hmm. subtle things where even without saying a word, he would just straighten up, you know, mm-hmm. all of a sudden. When he's going from Clark Kent to Superman, he straightens up. He looks taller and mm-hmm. he just looks different. So it's like, man, these are the type of things that make you really appreciate that they cast these actors.
Right.
And that the actors care so much about the role. Yes,
absolutely.
You want to believe that, like, they continue making choices like this. Like, I feel like, you know, with, I can't remember, Alfred Molina, you know, William Dafoe, they're older actors. So, like, there's a certain amount of, you know, experience that comes in with that, but you hope that they almost will start to gravitate to that a little bit more because you get some, you know, so much more out of those type of actors. Like, these are old dudes, and like, I mean, he beat the fuck out of Tom Holland. I don't care what you say. Like, he was like, to whole suplex him through the ground, get up, and like they were like really going at it. And to know that it's like, no, this is a man that's really doing his own stunts too. It's like, okay.
You gotta,
what are you going to say?
You really got to appreciate Willem Dafoe, because I saw in an interview when he was telling people that he was going to be playing Green Goblin in the original movies, you know, they're like, why are you doing this? Like, why are you playing a cartoon character? He's like, no, this is new. This is something fun. And look at what that did for superhero movies, like this boom that we are still currently in because of the success of early movies like Blade, Spider-Man, and the X-Men franchise.
Right.
And you got to think, like, this, the Green Goblin he played in those movies, it was like a movie villain you would expect from the time. It was a bit campy while still having a little bit of menacing. This one here, this is the same Goblin, but for a modern story.
Yeah.
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 You know, like,
this,
you
this can is really a, see, a Goblin you really don't like.
You can really see the struggle. Like, if you think about the original movie where Norman is on the ground and he's like crawling, and you can see like the Goblin speaking at the mask that's sitting in the chair. Like, that's a little bit over the top. That's a little bit campy, but you see him in the alleyway and he breaks the mask and he's like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, that's something more modern where you see that internal struggle. Whereas in the old movie, it's like, this guy's crazy. And it's like, you watch a new one, it's like, oh, he's crazy.
Yeah, he's deranged.
Right. Also, like, the suit he ended up with, you know, I like the purple and the green, the tornness, like, that was way better, I think, than the you know, Power Ranger suit we got in the original.
Yes.
Like, because his facial features is what really sells the Green Goblin to me. And you can't tell with that helmet on. But, you know, when he's smiling at Peter, when he's saying, like, you know, my bomb blew her up, but you're the one that killed her. You know, let's also think about, like, we've talked about that scene where Toby is stopping Tom. You know, his spider senses are probably going crazy behind him. Oh, you about to get stabbed, man.
Hey, bro, you know you about to get stabbed, bro. Do something. Like, I know you got to stop him, but it's been all right. Well,
yeah. We're stabbed. And then
we're stabbed now.
That scene hurt me, man, because I'm like, I can't. When did it happen? I turned to the person next to me. I was like, did Tobey Maguire just get shivved? I'm like, did that really just happen? I'm like, I know. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, come on, man.
He got him good. And I think, like, that's great, because in the first Spider-Man movie, Green Goblin was trying to stab Spider-Man in the back with his glider. Hey, he got him.
He got him. Finally got him. Took some time, but he got him.
Godspeed, Spider-Man.
Imagine how many people got pulled into that, you know, like, how many other people knew that Peter Parker was Spider-Man? You know, we didn't get any Aunt May's that came. Oh, wait, no. I saw a theory that kind of talked about why we didn't see a lot of the other people get pulled through. It was, remember when he was talking to Dr. Strange and he was telling him the spell and he was saying, I don't want my girlfriend to know. He was like, oh, my girlfriend should know, my best friend should know, you know, Aunt May should know. And that's why we didn't see any of the Harrys come through, or Gwen or Mary Jane or any of the Aunt Mays.
Such a great movie, though, man. Like, I don't know if they could have done any better. If you could make any changes to the movie, what would it have been?
This is a tough one, but I'm going to have to say, I wasn't a big fan of the reveal of his identity in the last one. And I feel like, because it kind of bogged down the beginning of this movie.
Yeah, so, it did.
It's because my favorite part of the movie is when the madness starts, you know, when the
right.
And the villains. So if I could make one change, I'd probably wrap up all the stuff in the beginning where, you know, I guess they've got to show the repercussions of everyone.
Yeah.
But I felt like, it went on a little too long.
It was a good one. Like 45 minutes. Exactly. Of them just figure all that. Come on.
Yeah. If you just trim that I mean, you'd have like the perfect movie because then we could just jump into the stuff everybody wants to see anyway, which is, you know, the multiverse madness. You know, we want to see Doc Ock, you know, we want to see the Goblin. And I mean, the theater I went to went crazy. When Andrew Garfield showed up, they went crazy. And then when Tobey Maguire showed up, it's like everyone just lost their minds.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you feel like they got enough screen time or would you have had them on longer?
I would have had them on longer, you know, but I feel like they got decent screen time. You know, it was nice. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like a cameo, but then, you know, the more of those guys I get on the screen, the more I want to see.
Their interactions was just so great. Like it almost seemed like they were like, you could tell like they were excited about it too. Like, and that's the fun in movies like this. Like when you get actors who are genuinely enthused and like doing what they're doing and like basically fanboying out, like the minute like Andrew Garfield like stepped on the scene, it was just like the little things. It's like, why do I got to tell you? Like, it's like, why I got to move further? Like, how can I stand on the ceiling? It's like,
I love that he's such a fan of the character.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a little moment in their interaction where he says something. I think he was kind of down on himself. And he said, like, I'm lame or something like that.
Because he's
like,
the only one that hasn't fought an alien.
Yeah. Right. And they're like, no, you're amazing. And I'm like, oh, man, look at that. You know,
you're an amazing Spider-Man.
I'm like, it was a little on the nose, but we got, you know, where they were going with that.
Yeah, like them, even when he was talking about, like, you know, like, do you ever, like, it comes out of you? And he, like, they're just looking at him, like, Andrew still was like, oh, this is nasty.
Yeah.
I told you, a web blockage, oh, yeah. Existential crisis, yeah.
Tell me about it. Oh, man, it was just, like, it was just good, man.
Yeah, when they came out, man, it was great, especially seeing Garfield as coming as Spider-Man and seeing Tobey Maguire show up as Peter Parker. I feel like those are the ones that they embody better. And what I like so much about Andrew's performance here is that we got to see him be more Peter Parker. And I feel like he did a better job at being Peter Parker in this movie than he has in previous movies. Mm-hmm. And he really got the short end of the stick because mentioning before in the other movie, like, they were, Sony was stuck between these two powerhouses and the dark and gritty stuff that DC is doing and this connected universe that Marvel has. And they were trying to do both of those. And as neither one of those is Spider-Man, you're doing that with the wrong character. Like, they, oh my God, they were trying to do an Aunt May movie. I will always that bring that
ridiculous.
Up. Whenever Spider-Man
is talking about,
they tried to do an Aunt May movie. They really,
you know, Peggy Carter, like the Peggy Carter show, is what got that off.
Was it?
I gotta believe, like, because you're starting to see like more, you know, because didn't you tell me she was supposed to be a spy?
She was supposed to be a spy, but I think that was in talks before Peggy Carter got her show, because I think that was even before Agent of the Shield came out.
Golly, who greenlit that idea?
Well, it didn't let that get off. Nobody greenlit it.
But who let that get on the paper, though?
So I would love to see them kind of get back to that universe and fix things, you know, with Black Cat and Green Goblin, show us the Mary Jane, find out the guy in the suit and the hat that showed up in the other movies. And I would like for them to retcon, find some way to get rid of the whole notion that Spider-Man had to be Peter Parker because his dad had used his DNA on the spiders. Because that also takes away from the core of Spider-Man. Like, it could have been anybody.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's like a lottery. You know, anybody could have been bitten by that spider.
Right.
So, that makes it, it also opens up the possibility for, you know, a great what if story, you know, down the line. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as like, what if the spider bit someone else? You always wonder about that. So, yeah, having it coded to his DNA, you know, probably wasn't the best way to go about it.
And but I think you just hit the nail on the head. The what if, you know, because, you know, what if season two has got to come back? And one thing that they didn't do, they didn't have too much like Spider-Man centric, you know, content that was like predominantly his universe. So just that alone, like what if the spider had bitten someone else other than Peter Parker, like immediately changes like the scope of what the Spider-Verse that we know is.
Well, yeah. Spider-Man is getting a show on Disney Plus, an animated one. I think it's called Freshman Year. And okay. I think it's going to follow the Tom Holland Spider-Man before he met up with the Avengers in Civil War. I don't know how much fun that would be. So I'm hoping that it's like an alternate reality and like maybe this is just the Disney Plus new Spider-Man animated show that's on. I watched Ultimate Spider-Man. They had another one that came out more recently. Wasn't really a fan of that one. So I'm hoping this is just a good Spider-Man show. Like, I'm a sucker for a good Spider-Man show. I even like Spider-Man Unlimited, but all that it's talk for another day.
I mean, now it's anybody's guess, you know, as far as, you know, what they're going to do next. But I mean, you know, I said it before, I'll say it again. Andrew Garfield, I always liked his portrayal of, you know, Peter, you know, Spider-Man. But I feel like when I saw him in this movie, you know how you don't realize how much you miss someone until you see them?
Yeah.
So it's like, I wasn't even, it's like, I didn't realize that I missed you as much as I did, but I did. And I, you know, I'm so happy that, you know, he did this movie. And I just know him being such a fan of the movie, him being such a fan of the character. I mean, I just know that if they offered him, you know, more Spider-Man movies, at least one more to complete that trilogy, I just know, you know, he would do it.
Hey, let's look at it this way. We've all seen the Morbius trailer. He walks past that picture of Spider-Man with murder across it. And we know this Spider-Man stopped pulling his punches. So
like
he can come back to this role with a lot of atoning to do for. And he would have more to atone for than the other live-action Spider-Man that we have.
There's a movie coming. There's got to be. He's going to have to deal with Kraven. Because
that would be why Kraven is hunting him.
Would hunt him down. See, it opens the door. It opens the door for Kraven right there.
And then now at this point where he's like kind of changed the way he's behaving, like he's got to atone while still like, you know, trying to be like, yo, I'm actually a good guy. I was just... Gotta explain himself in a way.
Yeah. So I've got a question for both of you. I don't know the answer to this, but I was just thinking about it. And I know there is a huge fight with you know, Marvel and Sony about the rights to Spider-Man, because I know that Marvel sold the rights to Spider-Man a while back. The rights to Spider-Man to Sony. And I know that Sony produced the first Spider-Man movies. And now they've got kind of like co-ownership of the character. So my question to you guys is, could you see a situation in the future where Marvel's got their MCU Spider-Man going on and then Sony brings back Andrew Garfield as their amazing Spider-Man, but you've got two Spider-Man movies coming out, but they're like different universes? Could you guys see something like that happening? You know, because I know that the partnership they've got going on right now, I'm a little fuzzy on, does it have to be just one Spider-Man and they kind of like share the proceeds? Or could you have like two Spider-Man movies at the same time?
So that's a great question. And the way that I looked at it in the beginning is at the end of this movie, they really set it up to go to where it's, you know, if something happens in their relationships, Sony can take Tom Holland and do their own trilogy and not have to worry about why Spider-Man isn't interacting with any of the Marvel characters.
Yes,
that's brilliant. On the flip side, if they do want to continue, Spider-Man can still pop up, but nobody will know who he is. You know, they'll just assume he's there to help. He'll probably go back to his everyday activities after that, kind of like we saw in like the animated shows, and pretty much in the animated show that just exclusively featured him.
So if anything, they kind of just made it a little bit easier to go back and forth without having a whole lot of explanation of where he's been or anything like that, because no one knows who he is except for us. And if Chris is kind of on the head with the Ben Reilly thing, then it's a lot easier for him to just kind of move freely throughout any universe, and then them still go with the whole Sony universe, which includes Venom, Morbius, you know, Andrew Garfield, Spider-Man, because I really do feel like they're going to lean on his as opposed to Toby's. Toby's story's done. Yes, like, agreed. At this point, Toby's story is basically done. If we see Toby again, it'll be another variant.
More cameo.
I would even see him being used as like a 2099 because he's an older version of Spider-Man. It'd just be a different person.
Could see him being used as, if they make a spider, like an evil Spider-Man, I could see it being Tobey Maguire.
I can see that.
You know.
But even so, it would be because our Toby has died, and now it's like Andrew and Tom and whoever the other Spider-Man who got to, you know,
Miles fight against and Gwen.
They all got to fight against, you know, Papa Spider type deal. But because of Into the Spider-Verse and the success of it, and honestly how fast they're even making the sequel, I do feel like they're trying to adopt that via the Sony-verse and the MCU Spider-Man. So I do feel like it's possible. It's contractually, like I said, I do feel like it's easier to do now because of the work.
I feel like they could make their own like Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield movie continuing. But the tricky part to that would be not including any of the stuff that happened in this MCU shared movie. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because you can't talk about Doctor Strange and like the spells and Withered and stuff like that. You know, right. He could say he met another Spider-Man, but he can't really go in depth because, you know, they don't have that Doctor Strange. You know, they don't have the rights to be using stuff like that. Even though Doctor Strange was mentioned in Spider-Man 2, when they were trying to come up with names
for Dr. Octopus. That is true.
And they were like, oh, what about Doctor Strange? But, you know, back then, it was completely different than what's going on now. So I believe that, you know, Sony could do something to where it's like, hey, we technically own the rights. We're going to make this Spider-Man movie. We're still going to have this shared Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, you know, we're still going to, you know, something will have to give, because it'll be tough for them to make an amazing Spider-Man 3 knowing that what this Spider-Man has done in the MCU and not acknowledge it.
Yeah. You would have to acknowledge it to some degree. Right. At least that it happened.
Unless they want to completely bypass, but who knows what type of relationship they have now, seeing as how, you know, Vulture shows up in the Morbius movie, apparently.
Yeah.
Like, is that a variant? Is this where, like, part where the timelines, like, kind of collide in on each other?
Maybe they'll explain that, because that did happen. And maybe, like, for that little short amount of time, because one thing that they mentioned, Venom and Eddie had been there for a long time. Like, he talked about the fact that they literally just been asking that guy the same question all day. So who's to say that Vulture didn't get out, start doing some stuff, got caught, and then happened to, you know, get drugged by Morbius before getting warped back? But you would have to explain that in the next movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so to make a long answer short, it really just depends on the studios. I think that they can make a live-action Spider-Man, because they're the ones that own the rights to the character. So they can still continue to do whatever they want while they have a shared character that operates in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
They can use Tom Holland as that vehicle, but
it makes it easier for them to do that as opposed to having to keep going back and forth.
Yeah, I think maybe that's why you have a character like Michelle Jones, who's not a Mary Jane Watson. You know, maybe she kind of like almost bleeds into an original character created between the studios,
mm-hmm.
to where, you know, she's kind of, as long as there's an MJ in these Spider-Man films, because if you think about it, what other reason, if this Spider-Man and MCU, he has no other reason to interact with any other characters that Sony does not own.
No.
So, of course, we'd like to see it happen, but, you know, maybe it's through Happy. You know, Happy picks up the feast that Aunt May was running. Or, you know, but something has to happen. You know, maybe he teams up with Matt Murdock again on some smaller scale things. So we've had a great talk here about Spider-Man No Way Home. Like I said in the beginning of the episode, top three Spider-Man movie. If you haven't seen it, please go check it out. And if you haven't subscribed to us, please go subscribe. If you haven't liked us on social media, followed us, please go do that. That's a nice little trilogy. Just like Spider-Man has had himself a nice little trilogy. When it comes to MCU, I would say he might be sitting at number definitely two or three when it comes to trilogies, how you look at it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this definitely shot him up.
Absolutely.
This is how you close out a trilogy for sure.
Absolutely. Gareth, thank you again for joining us. Always been a pleasure for you showing off your comic book knowledge, your film knowledge. Always great to have you on. Can't wait to have you on again, man. Thank you.
Appreciate you, Big Dog.
Hey, man, it's always fun. Always.
Awesome. And until next time, it's been me, your boy, C-Row Money Money, that's C.R.O. double dollar sign.
And me, your boy, Codename Comic. Y'all have a great one.
All right, take care.
We out, ya.
Peace.